Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Table Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
We are so honored to share this space with you tonight and all of our lovely storytellers. We have a great evening lined up for you. Before we get going, we want to thank some of our community partners. First, the Kodiak Arts Council, which has served as our umbrella organization since we began 10 years ago. We also want to thank GAMXT Public Radio, which graciously helps us record all of our stories at these live events, archive them on our website, and then they also replay them on both their stations, KMXT 100.1 and then KODK 90.7. A quick shameless plug, they are in the midst of their fall fun drive. So if you have the means, we highly encourage you to give to our wonderful public radio station. Galley Tables is a 100% volunteer-run organization, and with that, we'll tell you how tonight will go.
Our theme for tonight is Breaking the Ice, and we're going to have 7 storytellers. We'll have the first 4 and then a brief intermission and then the last 3 storytellers, and each of them has 7 minutes to share their story. So when they get to the 5-minute mark, they're going to hear this sound. When they hit 7 minutes, we're going to give them this very subtle signal to let them know it's about time to wrap up. And with that, let's get started on our show.
So I'll introduce our first storyteller, Ella Katelnikoff. She was born and raised on Kodiak. She works with children and adults as a speech-language pathologist at Providence. In her free time, you can find her hiking the mountains, crocheting, or leading Alaska's only community handbell choir at Isle Bell. And they have a show coming up in December. If you see her around, you can ask her why she won't eat pureed soups. And just FYI, if you've met her before and you say hi to her in the community, the person you're saying hi to might be her identical twin. So don't take it personally if the person you say hi to looks like they don't have any idea who you are. Please welcome Ella.
My story starts 15 years ago in a parking lot of a church in Maine. 2 strangers connected on a topic that they were both very interested in, and over the next hour, they stood there in the cold talking. The woman's name was Lee. She's a retired oncology nurse from Boston at the time, had just retired in her 60s. Lee and I talked that night. We made plans. We thought about the future potential. And that night, a future was formed that I never would have anticipated would impact our lives and the lives of so many others. Now I'm going to backtrack to the mid-90s. And I was a youth handbell ringer in this community at St. James Church. And our conductor took us to Russia as children, which you can think of what an experience that was, coordinating that in the mid-90s. But we would set up at places like Gorky Park and break the ice with our music. We had people crying in the audience. I mean, people that probably didn't expect to come across a group of American teenagers playing beautiful bronze bells. Fast track forward to college, there was no bells. Then I moved to Southern California, and in 1999, I was at work, and a coworker was breaking the ice. And she said, hey, by the way, Oh, and I need to backtrack. To explain what bell ringing is, it's like taking 13 people and sitting them down at a piano keyboard, and everyone takes two notes and you play a song. So you can imagine the collaboration that requires, right? The teamwork and the dependence. No one can bow out, because if you bow out, there's notes missing. So here I am in San Diego, and a coworker says, hey, have you by chance ever rung bells? And I said, yeah, actually. She said, well, we're starting the first community handball choir in San Diego. And so I joined that, and the level of music there and the fellowship was something that made a big impression on me. It was there that I saw what was the potential with our instrument. So then I moved to Maine in 2002, and I subbed in some different church choirs. And church choir ringing is fine if you're not looking, generally, if you're not looking for like a higher level experience with a really dynamic repertoire. So there I was in 2008. I just subbed for a church choir, and I met Lee in the parking lot. I didn't know this woman from Adam. And there I was that week planning to drop thousands of dollars on the equipment for a choir using money that my dad had left 20 years prior from when he had died, and she would find the ringers, and that was the deal. She had decades of experience from her ringing time in Boston. Boston is where Margaret Shercliffe introduced bells to this country, and she passed away in 1960, I believe. And she had some experience with people who learned under Margaret Shercliffe. So here I was, literally spending 4 hours at a time collaborating with this woman on our choir, which would be the Penobscot Bay Ringers and the first choir of its kind in Maine. And then in 2011, I moved back to Kodiak, and I thought, oh my goodness, I love to ring, but there will be no one to conduct. And it was a crisis, because I thought, I'll have to do this. And I didn't have any conducting experience, and I had to learn. There was no option. And I literally spent, because there I was, I came back to this hometown of mine. Some of us that had run together as kids came together. We co-founded Isle Bells. And I literally felt like an imposter for years. And the only way to help get past that was to bring different visiting conductors here, because then I could say to them, are we doing okay? And the choir could see that I wasn't totally bonkers in whatever music we were playing or strategies. So that experience, also people that know me know that I break the ice at any gathering I go to. It goes something like this. Hey, so, you know, what brings you to Kodiak? Do you like it here? And then I say, so what kinds of things are you interested in? And they might say their hobbies. And then I always go next to, so did you play an instrument in middle school? I mean, everyone that knows me knows all those are the three steps to meeting someone in Kodiak. And from that, I've gotten a lot of ringers where people say, oh, yeah, no, you don't want me. And I'm like, no, we do. If you played an instrument, we can make a bell ringer out of you. So the fellowship that you get from a group like Isle Bells is hard to describe. And next weekend we are performing Sunday, shameless plug, Sunday, 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock at the auditorium. Just have to put that out there. And we are now a nationally renowned choir within the handbell community, which is just a true honor. We're the only choir of the kind in the state. And I knew I wanted to do this Breaking the Ice speech last month when they announced it. A week ago, I got a message from the director of Penobscot Bay Ringers, the choir that I co-founded. She said that Lee is retiring this weekend, and she asked me to write something about my co-founding the choir with her. And I did. And I thought, what are the odds? The same weekend that I was choosing to talk about Lee, here we are thousands of miles away, two handbell communities connected by this one woman, fellowship from afar. And so this story was really about Lee and how that one conversation changed us forever. Thank you.
right. Our next storyteller is Kathleen Brennan. She was born in Washington, D.C., so not even a U.S. state. She's lived in 6 different countries: the U.S., England, Germany twice, Japan, Korea twice, and Italy. She's lived overseas a total of 23 years. She learned the English national anthem before the American one, but can only say the polite words and foods in all of those different languages. She was in Germany before the wall went up and after it came down, but not while there was a wall. She's worked for the Army, Navy, Air Force, and now Coast Guard. She has 2 adopted girls who are both in college now. Kathleen loves the beauty of Kodiak and the community, and she wishes she were a better photographer. Please welcome Kathleen.
Hello. My name is Kathy, and I'm tremendously nervous, but I'm really excited to be here. I wanted to talk about the first time that I moved overseas as an adult, and I moved to Japan. I moved there without knowing anyone there or without speaking the language, so I was pretty nervous about the experience. But I went, and it was the start of a lot of travel. So one of the things I do initially when I come to a new country is buy a car so I can drive, and then hit the road and go around all of the neighborhood and learn what the community's like. The second thing I did in Japan, at least, was to take sign up for a Japanese language class. Didn't go very well. I laugh and laugh when I hear Steve Martin say it's like they have a different word for everything, and that's pretty much how I'm like, I just can't do this. And the third thing is try and reach out and meet some new people. So very soon after I got to Japan, I met a local national, and she said she was part of a Japanese-American friendship group and invited me to go for a hike. And I was pretty excited about it. I like hiking. And so I said, sure, I'd love to go. And she said, and we're going to eat lunch, so bring some food. And I said, okay. And then she said, and we're going to go to the onsen afterwards. Now, I don't know if you know what an onsen is in Japan, but it pretty much requires you to get naked in front of a lot of other people. And that's not something that I was very comfortable with. But at that point, I'd already said yes twice, so I didn't think I could back out. So next weekend comes up. I drive to Lake Tawada, which is a beautiful area in Japan, park at the hotel slash onsen, and get out of the car. And as I'm getting out of the car, I see that there's like 13, maybe 15 people there that with the person that I knew or I had met. And I realize there's me, the only American, and 13 to 15 Japanese. I'm like, this is kind of a strange Japanese-American friendship group. And I'm a very kind of shy, retiring person. I'm trying to work my way out of that. Still 67 years down the road. It's not working all that well. And it was a very odd experience for me because most of the Japanese local nationals they joined the Japanese-American friendship group to practice their English. So as I'm hiking, I have 13 to 15 people kind of pushing people aside to have a conversation with me, which was a little, like I said, odd because I'm the person that stands in the corner in a party and doesn't talk to anyone. So we hike, and I'm thinking hike, old woman kind of hike. No, it was more like a stroll through the woods and let's circle back to the hotel onsen. So we get back to the hotel onsen, and I had literally brought an apple because when I go hiking, I don't really feel like eating a whole lot. They had reserved a room, set up like a Japanese typical that you might see with tatami mats and the low tables where you have to sit down, which is not so easy on an American, on the floor for long periods of time. And I'm sitting there nibbling on my apple, and everyone else is pulling out food, lots of different kinds of food. And I'm not sure I bet you many of you remember when food was seasonal, when there wasn't a whole lot of spicy food in the grocery stores, with the foreign food that you could find in the grocery store was essentially Italian. You know, you can get spaghetti and all those kinds of ingredients, but not a whole lot of anything else. So I'm looking around, and the food they're pulling out has eyes and tentacles. There's sushi. I've never eaten sushi before. And vegetables, a wide variety of vegetables that I didn't even recognize. And of course, they want to share with me. And since I'm polite, I don't want to be the ugly American, I nibble on all the things that they give me as I'm choking it down. It was not the best experience. But I did it with a smile on my face, because that's part of breaking the ice and making new connections. And I managed to get through the meal. Then it's time for the onsen. And I knew that I was going to have to get naked for this, which is something I was completely not comfortable for. Wasn't comfortable taking showers in high school. Certainly not comfortable getting completely naked in front of strangers. So I had a plan. I brought the biggest beach towel I could find, and I was going to wrap myself up in it. I was going to scoot over to the water, drop the beach towel, and then get into the water. And that was at least my plan. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. But I get to the changing room, and the first part is lockers, and you get naked. And so I quickly get naked and cover myself up with the beach towel. And they are like, no, can't do that. And so they make me give up my beach towel, and they hand me a Japanese washcloth that I can use. And I don't know, American washcloths are a pretty standard size, like about this big. Japanese washcloths are about this big and really don't cover a whole lot. So I am like, oh my God, how can I do this? But I do. And then the next step after you change and get naked is that there's another area where you sit down with little stools, little plastic stools, and there's like a little faucet, and everyone has their own while they're sitting down there naked, and you scrub your whole body so everyone in the room knows you're clean. So I did that as quickly as I could, because I figured at least when I got in the onsen, the water would cover me a little bit and whatever. So I did scrub myself, got into the pool or the onsen. It was wonderful, and it didn't feel too bad when you're covered with water, and I'm like, I'm staying in here forever. And so they started worrying about me because I'm turning bright red being Irish-American. They think I'm having a heart attack, so they're like, you need to get out, and I'm like, no, I just got in here. But I eventually got out, and I think it's really important in terms of breaking the ice just to be really willing to try new experiences and meet new people. So thank you.
Thank you. Our next storyteller is Steve Belden. He lived in Alaska since 1978, but he never made it to Kodiak until November of 2020. He was here 3 days, and he said to Julie, why are we going back to Anchorage? If you fall in love with Kodiak in November, there's something wrong with you. And you're supposed to be here. So since coming here, they've been overwhelmed by how welcoming and generous the community is, and they love being here, and they're grateful every day to call Kodiak their home. So please welcome Steve.
I was hoping to borrow Ella's stool, but she scooted out of here and took it with her, so I'm just going to have to wing it. Wow. Like she said, I'm just so grateful to be here. Look at all y'all. I've done a lot of theater in my life where there have been more people on stage than there have been in the audience. So this is just delightful. So one of the things I love about Kodiak is that people show up. you know? And one of the great traditions that you guys have here is that on New Year's Day, the entire town goes down to Mill Bay, and they go jump in the ocean, and then they get out as quickly as humanly possible. It amazes me that there's not more trips to the ER, frankly, because people are scrambling over those icy rocks trying to get back to their car as quickly as they possibly can, and they're pushing and shoving and kicking each other. It's pretty wild. But you may have noticed, when you're out there, you may have noticed that some people stay in. What are they doing? What is wrong with them? Why? Well, there's some really good reasons why. There's some really good reasons. Sauna and cold date back thousands of years. Our people, humans, have been doing this since time immemorial. Cold exposure and heat exposure are enormously healing. It improves your immune system, reduces inflammation, improves cognition, which is something that I definitely need help with. The list of benefits is huge. I got into it originally. My dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's a few years ago, and we were doing a lot of research on what we could do, and there's nothing you can do in late-stage Alzheimer's, but there is stuff you can do for prevention. And I wanted to touch real briefly on sauna. In Finland, there's about 5 million people, 3 million saunas. They take it real seriously. And they've done a lot of research into the benefits of it, and what they found, I'm going to give you a bottom line here because I don't have a lot of time, but in a longitudinal study of men between the ages of 20 and 60, if you did sauna 5 to 7 days a week for 20 minutes each time at a minimum of 165 degrees, there's a 30% reduction in risk of death from all causes and a 70% reduction in risk of dementia and Alzheimer's. 70%. Ought to be a first-line treatment here, right? But let me get back to cold, because that's why we're here, breaking the ice, right? So I got into cold doing showers up in Anchorage. Worked my way up about 3 minutes. When we moved to Kodiak, my buddy Larry, one of the first things that happened when we got here, my buddy Larry invited me to go down to Gibson Cove with him and a bunch of other idiots and go jump in the ocean. Well, I was running late, so I got there late. They'd already done 10 minutes in there, so Larry stood on shore while I went in for 1 minute, which was quite enough at the time. And I got out, and I just felt amazing. Oh, just amazing. Couldn't wait to do it again. Well, the next week, on December 11th, actually, it was December 11th, and I remember it very clearly, air temp was 15 degrees, water temp was right at freezing, and the wind was gusting up to 50 knots. 50 knots. So the hardest thing about this one, we did 10 minutes. The hardest thing about this one was we had to go retrieve our clothing from the tree line. And I had blown out my knee the week before, so I'm limping around like crazy. And we didn't know how to dress at the time, so we were still wearing sweatpants and shirts, trying to put those on when you're freezing to death. Pro tip, wear a fleecy, like a nice fleece bathrobe kind of a thing and a nice warm hat. Yeah, makes it a lot faster. All right, so I got some notes here so I can remind myself what to say. All right, when we first started, we used to just go into the water and we would run around screaming, and it was a very individual thing. What we started doing is kind of like circle time, where we get out there and we circle up, and one of us will call the meeting to order. It's usually Gustav. He's the district attorney. He'll call the meeting to order. He'll say, "Hi, my name's Gustav. It's been a week since my last dip." And then he'll talk for a bit, and then we just go around the circle. And it's amazing. It's amazing because you get to the end of that 10 minutes, and it flies right by, and you're fine. And you're like, wow, let's go another 10. So anyway. Okay, let's see. New people. We get new people all the time. I invited a couple of friends of mine who just got here from San Diego. First time out there, 10 minutes. I invited my buddy Joel last week, and Joel was like, "There's no way I'm going to be able to do that." No, he did 10 minutes. Can't wait to do it again. Said he was high for 3 days afterward. All right, so out here in the lobby, there's a clipboard with a sign-up sheet. It's got my phone number on it. If you got any questions, please put your phone number. You can write that down. Shoot me a text, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. Disclaimer, nothing I have said is to be taken as medical advice. I am not a doctor. Please consult with your doctor if you have any pre-existing health conditions, and you might want to talk to your psychiatrist also. All right, last, I'm going to wrap this up here. The third time I went out was on Christmas Day of 21, and me and Larry and Luke Niemeyer went down there, and we started a little fire on the beach, and then we went out, we did our 10 minutes. Well, I'd invited Daria. Everybody knows Daria, I'm sure. And Daria showed up in a hot pink 3-millimeter neoprene suit, fluorescent. And she swam out to the rock and back, which is about 300 yards. So we waited for her. We're standing on the beach, and I'm trying to warm up on this teeny tiny fire. And Daria gets out of the water, and she comes over to us, and she looks across the fire at me. She says, "Say to yourself, I am warm. I am warm." And I said, "How do you say that in Russian?" She gives me this little smile and she says, "We don't have to." So in conclusion, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., I expect to see all of you there. Parking is very limited, so you're going to want to get there early. You might want to carpool. Bring your nice fleece bathrobe and a warm hat. Leave your car running with the heater on full blast. Have a nice hot thing to drink on your way home. And can't wait to see you. Thank you very much.
Our next storyteller is Fru Finn. She has lived in Kodiak with her husband Sean for 43 years. They have two daughters who are amazing. They have two adorable grandchildren named Finn and Kinsey. And a fun fact about Fru is that she has been a stalking friend of Donny Osmond for over 50 years. And they are actually friends, might I add. Please welcome Fru.
When I first told my husband I was doing this and it was about breaking the ice, he said, "What do you know about breaking ice? You don't even shovel snow." So anyway, humor, I've always used humor in my life. And I find it easy to deal with things and I find things funny. Sometimes people don't agree. But, you know, I try to find humor in things. And breaking the ice and getting to know people, I think humor does a lot. So I have two little stories to break the ice. So for those of you who don't know me, you can get to know me better. And for those who know me, you already know. So Kodiak, we are blessed with fantastic gardeners here. A lot of them are in this room. They grow beautiful flowers, and the produce is unbelievable. I'm not a grower. I'm a consumer. So they grow, and I purchase their things that they grow. Now, I have friends who are also gardeners, and so I listen to all this stuff, and it involves getting peat moss and seaweed to put on the things and making sure your lettuce doesn't bolt. And it's very, very complicated, and it's not an easy thing to do. So I give them kudos. Now, my husband likes to grow plants, and every year a friend of his gives him a cherry tomato plant. And this is a very special tomato plant that we get every year, and the first tomato my granddaughter gets to pick and eat, the cherry tomato, and the last one she gets to eat. And so he was leaving for 2 weeks, which meant I was in charge of the tomato plant. So I said, "It'll be fine." So the day he leaves, I come home and there's sticky notes everywhere. Don't forget to water the tomato plant. So, okay, everything's fine. So he comes back. The plant is still alive. It's green. Everything is fine. And my daughter comes over for dinner and he says, you know, my tomato plant, I don't think I'm having as many tomatoes as I did last year. And I was so proud. I said, well, you can't blame me because not only did I water that plant, I picked off all the flowers so it wouldn't burst. Am I the only one? Am I the only? I have got to find someone else. This is unbelievable. So there's like a moment of silence, and he turns, and then there was some not nice words, and then it was, you know, there's questioning my intelligence, and how did I go to college, and all this, and you grew up with citrus trees in your backyard. And I said, where do you think they came from? I said, well, I don't know. They're just on the tree. I don't remember flowers. And he says, well, where do you think they? I said, I don't know. I don't remember any flowers. And then he says, well, where do you think the tomatoes come from then? And I said, well, that's a miracle. I didn't know that. I said, isn't that something? Anyway, and also I found out that pickles come from cucumbers. Did you know that? Now when you go and see all the pickles, it used to be a cucumber. Miracle. Miracle. Anyway, my next story is about, are there any Star Wars fans here? Star Wars? Oh, you're everywhere. You're everywhere. Jeez. Let me tell you a story. I'm a total fraud regarding Star Wars. I have never seen Star Wars my whole life. Never seen it. Now, how I've gotten away with this, I'll tell you a secret. I can tell people now. It's been over 50 years I've been doing this. 1977, May of 1977, I was a sophomore in college. The Star Wars movie was coming out. Now, this is a time before internet, cell phones, and Kardashians. This was this was back in a time far, far away. And all people could talk about, this was a huge, huge deal. They were on the cover of Time, Life, and Newsweek. And people were lined up for 2 weeks before the movie came out. And they're lined up all along this intense, waiting to buy tickets to go to this movie. So the movie comes out, and I'm thinking, okay, it'll die down. You know, we don't have to hear about this anymore. But no. Then all they could do was talk. They would just ask you, have you seen a movie? And I would unfortunately say, no. Well, they were so enthused that they felt compelled to share the whole story with you. So they would tell you from the beginning, you hear about the princess with the honey bun ears, and you got the swords, and you got you would hear everything. So about the fifth time someone asked me, and I said, no, I haven't seen it, and they started to tell me, I caught a common theme through the whole stories, and it was, so if they ask you, have you seen the movie, I said, yes, the bar scene was my favorite. That's all you had to do. That's all you had to do. I've never seen the movie. I have no idea what the bar scene is. But apparently, it was the funniest and the greatest part of the movie. So that's all you had to say. And they were like, oh, yeah, wasn't it great? Yes, we don't have to talk about it anymore. We both know it. It's over and done. So as karma would have it, my daughter and her husband are huge Star Wars fans. My grandson, his nursery, Star Wars-themed nursery. He's got the Death Star light, the R2-D2 lamp. We've got Baby Yoda. You know, we've got all of this. They all love it. And I recently just took my granddaughter to Disneyland. And I'm a Disney person. My daughter was a Disney person, and my granddaughter will still be a Disney person. So we go there, and I don't know if you know this, but do you know who Disney bought? Star Wars. Disney owns Star Wars now. So Tomorrowland is now Star Wars Land. And I'm like, karma. This is just karma happening to me. And I'm in line with my granddaughter to have a picture with Winnie the Pooh. And she's talking to a little girl that's next to her. And the father says to her, "Oh, where are you from?" And she says, "Earth." Versus a galaxy far, far away. What is happening here? I don't understand. So then we go to, I go into a gift shop, and I did find something there. And it is a little picture, a cartoon. It's for my grandson Finn's nursery. It is a cartoon of the bar scene. And on the back, I wrote him a little thing. It says, "Dear Finn, the bar scene's my favorite part. Love, Grandma."
All right, our fifth storyteller tonight, Tim Gossett, first came to Kodiak 45 years ago. He enjoys international travel adventures, snow skiing, playing golf, and walking the island trails with his dog. Please welcome Tim.
Before you start the timer, I think that everybody should do this one time. I'm not saying I'm some big speaker, because I'm not. But how many times do we all pass each other in this town, and you know, you recognize somebody, you don't know their name, you don't know their story, and it'd just be cool if everybody did one of these. So, yeah. So in 1971, my family was on vacation in Canada on Vancouver Island, Nanaimo, BC. We got distant relatives that lived there. Some of which we'd met before, some of them we hadn't. Two of them were commercial fishermen, a set of brothers. We met on the docks in Nanaimo, beautiful morning. My dad, being the joker that he was, broke the ice and said, "You don't happen to need an extra deckhand," motioning towards us four brothers. Unfortunately, or fortunately, how you look at it, one of them said, "Actually, we let a guy go yesterday." So everybody looked at me, the oldest of four boys, and I guess it was destiny and whatnot. The rest of the family returned home on vacation, and me at 16 years of age went fishing on a 62-foot troller and for 17 days. The first 4 days I was seasick, but I must have done something right because they asked me back. The next year was my junior year, so I suggested coming my senior year because, in theory, I could, you know, after I graduated from high school, I could be there. The catch was the season started April 15th, and I didn't graduate till May 15th. So I made another brilliant decision in my life and dropped out of high school with 1 month to go. At 18 in 73, what an island, that Vancouver Island, just like Kodiak. It was awesome. I didn't have a big, a fortune, but I was able to buy a Datsun 240Z, top-of-the-line ski equipment, had enough money to last a couple months into the ski season, at which point I hoped to have a job wherever I ended up. And a little bit set aside for a special investment. I bought 10 pounds of pot. as fate would have it, I got busted for the pot, crashed the car, ended up with my dog hitchhiking with a thumbs out to Aspen, Colorado. What a great place. But after 3 years, I figured, you know, it was time for the next chapter. So I returned back to Southern California and got involved with commercial landscaping. But, you know, the call of the ocean was still kind of there. I had friends that would talk about fishing in Alaska. More specifically, shrimp fishing in Kodiak, Alaska. These guys were killing it back then. So I was all set to go, and the phone rang one day, and it was some friends of mine in Honolulu that wanted to know if I was interested in help transport a sailboat from Alawai Boat Harbor in Honolulu, Hawaii, to Newport Beach, California. I just thought that sounded pretty cool, so I put the commercial fishing thing on hold and flew to Hawaii. I got to say that what was going on there was some friends of the family had built a sailboat in their backyard, had sold everything that they owned, and was going to sail the world this big trip. Their first stop was in New Zealand. The mother got cold feet or freaked out about the time they hit Tahiti, and so they turned around and picked me up and swapped her out with me, and I don't know, they went to do something else. The sailing was incredible. I can't say enough about it. You know, the middle of the night, you're on wheel watch, and it's just you and the stars and the good Lord, and all of a sudden you hear this, you know, and you look off to the side, and there's phosphorescence up here. It's from the porpoise down there. It's from dolphin. Anyway, we were making like 100 miles a day, navigating with a sextant before, you know, GPS and whatnot. And at one point, we're 600 miles off the coast of California, and we made dinner that night, and it was the skipper's watch, and my two buddies and I, you know, on a boat like that, maybe you don't have really enough room for provisions 3 weeks into a trip, so maybe we had extra thick Spam steaks or, you know, an extra can of SpaghettiOs or something. Anyway, we made dinner and sat down. I happened to be in the middle, small table, my two buddies on the side. The skipper comes down really quick. He just wolfed his food down. Kerosene stove burns kerosene in a gas form, so you have to prime it with alcohol. So I would usually put the cap back on and put it in the cubby and get it away. This guy, skipper, was in a hurry. He wanted to make a pot of coffee before the sail back winded itself. And so he touched the eyedropper onto the burner, and it immediately exploded. And he turned and whirled. This is all happening like in three-quarter time. And things as he turned were going up in flames, navigational charts, seat cushions, before it caught the Molotov cocktail in his other hand, which was the container, on fire. Well, he turned and let that fly too. It flew through the air and landed in my plate of SpaghettiOs and whatnot and went like this, and this is where I do my Richard Pryor imitation. I did the 100-yard dash in 3-3 on fire. You do crazy things when you're on fire. People get out of your way. Next day, I had bruises because I went up without any arms. I'm trying to rip my clothes off of myself. Get up on the deck. I look out at a fishing line we had, thinking, that's probably plan Z, jump in the water. About this time, everybody else comes out of this cloud, which was fire extinguishers, and looked at me. I look like, you know, Tom Hanks in Castaway. You know, bad analogy, but that's the best I can come up with. Anyway, what happened to you? And I'm like, what happened to me? You didn't see? I guess it was everybody for themselves. Anyway, I laid naked on board for the next 2 days reading the first aid manual about burns. It's not about butters or our mothers told us. It's about, you know, Silvadine or this kind of thing. Anyway, I'm happy to report that, you know, I was a little trepidatious getting to the dock, and everybody's waiting there with their champagne and my family and my girlfriend and stuff, and I come kind of like limping off and whatnot, but everything to this day is working just fine. So thanks for your time.
Our next storyteller was born in Kodiak and just can't seem to get away. He's a fisherman. He likes to try to trick ChatGPT into things that I'm not going to say in public. Please welcome Ruben Ivanov.
Well, I wrote this on my phone and it died, so I'm doing an impromptu. No, I'm kidding, but I saw everybody else practiced a lot, and I'm really happy to be up here. I've been envious for a while seeing everybody up here and how many people paid to watch them talk, and I've dreamed about it, but the list always fills up really quick, and sometimes I'm not in town. So finally I got my chance, and thanks everybody for making this possible. So I was kind of nervous, as you might think, and I saw the projector, so I asked if they play some background stuff to distract you, like Temple Run. And they said, no way, this is like an auditory thing. This is serious. And sticking with that, I said, how about some like Past Lives by Bourne's? That's popular on Instagram Reels. And they were like, no, and I'm kidding, of course. But yeah, so I tried to think of cold stories with the theme icebreakers. Winters in Alaska, fishing out west in the Bering, recently read King Crab. And I was out there. We didn't have to break any ice. It was warmer than Kodiak. We were sweating the whole time. But there's a lot of wheel watches, a lot of boring watches, and I was watching Deadliest Catch. And they thought that was really funny. They're like, why are you watching this show? You know, I'm driving this 120-foot boat and watching Deadliest Catch. And I go, do you think we'll break ice? And they're like, no, that's more of a Opelio snow crab thing. And I'm like, it looks fun. And they're like, it is not fun. We don't call it breaking ice. It's beating ice. It's building, and you got to keep it down, or the boat's going to get unstable. And I was like, okay, sounds horrible. It's cold, but you're sweating at the same time, both sides of the extreme. So I thought, all right, well, let's be less literal, figurative. Icebreakers help you through awkward pauses and the such. And I thought about communications class. And the first day we had to take random words out of a hat. And I picked the most boring thing possible, photosynthesis. But I ran with it. And I had the class cracking up. And I thought, this is fun. And I'm good at it. And why is that? And I thought, I come from a big family. And we had to fight for our parents' attention. And so I've always been kind of a charmer. But, you know, so only naturally, I was selected for one of the more prestigious plays Kodiak Auditorium's ever had the pleasure of putting up, Peter Pan. I had the protagonist role of Lost Boy number 3. And I don't know if I ever did outgrow that part. They say it's not uncommon for child actors to not, after method acting, just being able to transition from real life. And I mean, you can't blame me. It's fun being in that role. And then right around the time the play ended, my mother and Sandy Sullenberger, they contacted the circus college in Florida. And they got a husband and wife couple to come up and host a circus camp. I don't know if you guys watched the play. And we learned how to juggle and all types of cool skills. And then they taught us to bring it all together to be engaging for the audience. 2 weeks later, I'm a certified full of tricks and icebreakers to disrupt my class. So I feel bad about it now. Looking back and being a bit of a class clown and... you know, if you get enough clowns in if you think about school as like an institution of learning, you bring enough clowns in, you don't get scholars out of the clowns, you turn the whole thing into a circus. So I hope anyone that's been wanting to come up here and tell a story should definitely sign your name down. It's great, and thanks for everybody.
Go.
Our next storyteller, our last storyteller of the evening, is Sarah Colburn. She was born and raised in Idaho. She went to college in Oregon and started her teaching career in Alaska, but out in the rural villages, one being Akiachak. She might correct me when she comes up here for that name. It's outside of Bethel. Her story takes place there on the Kuskokwim River. After 10 years of villages, yes, villages, she did three total, she decided to move to the big city of Kodiak. This is her second year teaching here. Her family consists of her and her three dogs, two of which she got from Akiachak. Please welcome Sarah. So I was teaching in Akiachak, and I became really good friends with my aide, and she was always inviting me to do things, and she often invited me out to go to fish camp with her. And so one of the times that I went to fish camp with her, she was like, come, let's go look at the new house. So we go, and I look up, and I'm like, ooh, he's pretty cute, and the guy hammering up on the roof, and he's looking down, ooh, she's pretty cute. So he was a little too shy to ask me out, so he had his cousin ask for him, and so they asked me to go on a boat ride with him. I wasn't sure what that meant. Like, wasn't sure if was that a date, or, like, is this code for something? I wasn't really sure, but I said yes to adventure, so I said yes. So we go on a boat ride. It's kind of cold, so we get back to fish camp. He offers me coffee. I don't like the taste of coffee. If I'm going to drink it, it better be foo food. Yeah. This was black with the ground still in it. Yeah. So, but he asked me to go on another boat ride with him. I did, even with the bad coffee. And this time he asked me if he can kiss me. Why do you want to kiss me? And in the most mischievous way, he said, because I've never kissed a white woman before. We were happily together for 2 years, miserable for one. We went on a lot of Yupik dates, as I call them. He was a dog musher, so a lot of those Yupik dates included dog mushing activities. One of being where we went out on the frozen ice and we set a net under the ice to catch the fish to feed to the dogs. A couple of times he invited me to ride on the sled while he was running the dogs. So one time it was really muddy, so mud is flying. I don't know if you know this about dog mushing, but the dogs poop and pee as they're running. So I'm in the sled. No, please don't hit me. So then another time that he invited me to go on the sled, we're out on the frozen river on the ice, and I hear it crackling, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I weigh this much. He weighs this much. The dogs weigh this much, and there's this many. Okay, how thick is the ice? Because we're well over 1,000 pounds. So the ice, for about 800 pounds, it needs to be about 5 inches thick. Anything more than that, like for the vehicles, it should be about a foot deep of ice. And every year, it freezes over, and so then the river becomes the highway, and that's how a lot of the villagers travel back and forth. And so George's mushing partner, he had fish for dinner, and he accidentally digested a fish bone, and it cut all the way down. And so he was, you know, in the emergency room fighting for his life. The wife had called and asked if we can go watch the kids. They had two teenage boys and a little four-year-old girl. So we bundle up, get my puppy, and we take the snow machine the hour drive from Akiachuk to Bethel, where they lived. And so we're watching the kids, like the next morning or something, one of the mornings. George is like, okay, we're going to go back to Akiachuk. So he took the dog team, the boys, the snow machine, they all went, and then I followed behind in the pickup, not my own, and had the four-year-old girl and my puppy. I traveled the river road many times, but never was I driving it by myself. and definitely not in a borrowed vehicle or anything. But I was a little bit nervous about going because it's a frozen river, so it's not like there's street signs. There's no stoplights. There's not a McDonald's on the corner that I can use as a landmark. I mean, I have to use real landmarks. And so, and there was like this one curve that always threw me off for some reason. And so I was really hesitant knowing that that curve always threw me off. But I made it. I survived. We got to Akiachuk. It was a warm day, so it was pretty slushy. So there wasn't really a lot of traffic because it wasn't really the best conditions to drive on the river. And so we're in Akiachuk. He's doing whatever. We have dinner. At some point in the evening, the wife calls and she's like, "Hey, please don't drive on the ice. Like, I'm not comfortable with it." And I'm like, "Yeah, we already did, and we're going to again." Of course, I didn't tell her because she had enough to worry about. So the evening goes on. George is like, "Okay, it's time to go back." And it's dark now. I'm one of those people who suffer from driving at night, like, and especially in the rain, like, bad combination. So I was worried because, again, I'm very new at driving on this frozen ice highway, and it's dark. It had warmed up, so it's very wet. So this is not a good combination. But I'm like, okay, I got this. I'll do it. So I'm driving on the frozen river, that's slushy, puddly, and I'm like, okay, not too bad. I got this. A couple of the puddles, they were a little bit fun, you know, because they weren't too big. And then I get to a puddle that's no longer fun. This puddle is big. This puddle is long. I have enough time to think, uh-oh, do I stop? Wait, if I stop, is that weight going to make me go under? Do I stop in reverse? Wait a minute, is that same emotion, like that same stopping, going to make me go under? Maybe I need a turn. Wait a minute, if I turn, am I going to go into where there's no ice? I'm thinking maybe I need to start rolling down the window. Maybe I need to wake the 4-year-old and have her ready to jump out the window with me. I'm thinking, if the truck goes under and we get out, how am I going to pay for this truck that's not mine? If I survive and the little girl doesn't, how am I going to live with myself? I can't tell you how long that puddle was. I can't tell you how deep it was. I can't even tell you if I was driving on ice or backs of angels. But I can tell you, I'm thankful I didn't break the ice.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller. Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life.